I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. 40 years ago, in 1976, the country was gripped by anxiety and fear. Members of the American Legion, who had attended a conference at the Bellevue Stratford Hotel in Center City, Philadelphia, were becoming seriously ill with high fever and pneumonia. 34 died, and no one could explain the cause of the outbreak. Adding to the mystery, some who contracted the disease were not Legionnaires and had not attended the convention. A Time magazine article that summer had the headline, "The Philadelphia Killer." Eventually, a bacterium that thrives in unsalty warm water was identified, and now we know the cause of Legionnaires' disease. It took a team of epidemiologists to track down the culprit, the largest medical investigation in U.S. history at that time. There are still outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease. In fact, the CDC reported that the number of cases has tripled in the last 15 years. Well, today on Radio Times, Legionnaires' disease then and now. Let me introduce our three guests. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is David Frazier. He's an adjunct professor of epidemiology at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. He led the CDC's field investigation of the 76 outbreak in Philadelphia. David Frazier, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you.
Also with us is Steve Hornstein. He was a doorman at the Bellevue from 74 to 76. In fact, after the outbreak, they moved him inside. He became a desk clerk, and he's now bell captain at the Warwick Hotel, also in Philadelphia. Steve, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me here.
You're very welcome. And joining us by telephone is Dr. Janet Stout. She's president and director of Special Pathogens Laboratory, research associate professor at the University of Pittsburgh Swanson School of Engineering, and she is a modern-day Legionnaires disease expert. And Janet Stout, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
No, happy to join you and your listeners to talk about this important public health problem.
Absolutely. Let me begin with you, David Frazier. Let me go back to the summer of 1976. You were an epidemiologist. When you heard about this outbreak, what were your thoughts?
Well, my first thought was here was an opportunity for one of my trainees who had just finished a month-long course in epidemiology to get a good assignment. Because I heard from my laboratory director that the influenza branch had received a call about these four deaths in Pennsylvania, and they were trying to get an invitation from the state health department to have a federal team go up to start the investigation. And I wanted to convince them that they ought to take my trainee along with them on that investigation.
So as an epidemiologist, not to say that you were happy about this, but this was a chance to do some detective work.
This was a chance for – the trainees come in for 2 years at the Centers for Disease Control to learn epidemiology. And so they need to cut their teeth on an outbreak, and this looked like an important outbreak to join.
Steve, you were a doorman at this hotel at this time. As news began to spread and there were stories of people contracting some mysterious illness and some of them dying of it, what were your thoughts?
Initially, I was shocked and disappointed.
Were you scared?
Personally, I was not scared. I felt bad for the families and the victims. But business deteriorated as people panic spread, and I could see the hotel deteriorating business-wise, and it was unfortunate because it was the thriving center of downtown Philadelphia where all the movers and shakers would frequent. Got to know a lot of political people from that hotel.
So people stayed away? I mean, would people cross the street instead of not wanting to go by this hotel?
It was very visible. People would walk on the east side of Broad Street to stay away. People that were making deliveries were apprehensive. I know personally firsthand, I had friends that were worried about coming around me. And it was unfortunate. And there was pretty much panic.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Janet Stout. We've been talking about Legionnaires' disease and this outbreak in Philadelphia. What do we know about it today?
Well, you mentioned the anxiety and fear that was associated with the outbreak back in 1976, and actually that continues today. We saw what happened in the Bronx last summer and in Flint, Michigan also last year. And based upon what we know about cases of Legionnaires' disease that occur every year, if you If you add them all up since 1976, we're talking about somewhere between 700,000 and over a million cases of Legionnaires' disease just in the United States. So that's why I say it's a very, very significant public health problem, but one that's preventable because we know it's in the water.
And we do want to get back to that, but let me get back to you, David Frazier. Help us understand what caused this. Was this a new bacterium? What was behind? What was the culprit that created Legionnaire's disease?
Well, the agent of Legionnaire's disease is a bacterium called Legionella pneumophila, which had not previously been identified before this investigation, and indeed wasn't identified until January of 1977, some 5 months after the outbreak.
Well, and in fact, and I guess, I mean, there is the kind of gumshoe part of epidemiology and trying to figure out what's going on. And then there are these sort of happy accidents, I guess, where a colleague was at a cocktail party and something came up and they thought, well, let's go and let me check a couple of things out.
You know, this colleague had been involved in processing specimens from the outbreak in August of 1976. He was in the Rickettsia lab, and Rickettsia are a special a group of bacteria that are very difficult to grow, and they're isolated generally by inoculating guinea pigs and then harvesting the liver of the guinea pig and inoculating them into eggs. It's a very complicated process. He had gone through that process with the specimens from Philadelphia and had some deaths of eggs, some problems with his guinea pigs, but concluded that was just contamination of his specimens and had set them aside, reported them as negative. At a Christmas party, he was, as I have heard the story from him, berated by one of the people at the party for working at CDC and CDC having screwed up and not solved the problem. He went back to the laboratory over the Christmas holidays and re-examined the slides from the guinea pigs he'd inoculated.
Because someone had berated him about this?
Because someone had berated him about him, and he just said he was just going to go back and check his work again. And he looked for a long time through the slides of guinea pigs and then spotted what looked like a group of bacteria in the guinea pig liver. And instead of concluding that was a contaminant, he would process it as though it were a rickettsia and see what happened. And he did and ran all the tests with serum from people who had recovered from the disease and serum from people who had just developed it and showed rising levels of antibody in the blood of people who'd recovered from the disease when the antigen that he used was this bacterium.
And so that was literally the aha.
That was
moment?
The aha when he broke the code for the specimens and showed rising levels of antibody. When he used this bacterium as his antigen, he knew he had found the agent, and could he and the chief of his unit reported to the director of the Center for Disease Control that they'd found it.
And we're talking about people that contracted the disease. And I guess not everyone that breathed in some of these droplets, but that was really the how someone could breathe in this bacterium and potentially get Legionnaire's disease.
Yes, we had shown through that shoe leather epidemiology that you described that this disease does not spread from person to person, that it is not traceable to the water, drinking the water in that hotel, or food, or lots of other activities. But it was the risk went up the more time you spent in the lobby of the hotel and the more time you spent on the sidewalk around the hotel. So we had
not in the rooms then.
And not in the rooms. It was associated with none of the rooms of the hotel. But that evidence was pretty strong that this was an airborne problem. We didn't know what the agent was until Joe McDade isolated Legionella.
Well, you worked on the sidewalk, Steve. You worked in the lobby.
I feel pretty lucky. Maybe I should buy a lottery ticket. it's kind of scary. But I had a friend who had the barber shop in the rear of the hotel, Bill Moy, who's currently with me at the Warwick. Yeah. And I remember him telling me, he was where Tiffany's is today, that his clients were canceling left and right. And he was one of the most successful barbers in Philadelphia, still is. And people like banished, and maybe they were, there was some logic to their fear, looking back in retrospect.
The idea that it was what, so pouring, I mean, I'm trying to imagine droplets coming off the roof.
A cooling tower sits on the roof, or sat on the roof of the Bellevue Stratford Hotel, and its role is to get rid of heat. And it does that by blowing mist out the top of the cooling tower and having that evaporate. That mist layers across the top, the roof of the building, and then layers down the side of the building in it's one of the interesting aspects of airflow in the cities, and could be drawn then into the lobby or expose people on the sidewalk at ground level.
Well, let me turn to you, Janet. And I mean, can we say that it was the hotel's air conditioning system?
Well, at the time, Dr. McDade and the other microbiologists at CDC had not figured out how to grow this newly identified bacteria. So although the epidemiology pointed to the cooling tower, water from the cooling tower was never tested for Legionella, and the bacteria never grown from that water. So subsequent to the outbreak at the Bellevue Stratford Hotel and development of the media by Jim Feely and George Gorman at CDC, they were subsequently able to grow the organism from other water sources, both cooling towers and drinking water.
So as we understand Legionnaire's disease today, Janet, what are the sources?
Well, basically where you can find warm water, although cooling towers have been associated with large outbreaks, the majority of cases of Legionnaire's disease come from exposure to the warm water in the building, and particularly in hospitals and other healthcare facilities. So that water comes into the building with basically undetectable low numbers of Legionella bacteria from our drinking water. It finds its way into the warm water system of the building or the cooling tower and then grows happily in there to numbers that can cause illness.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Janet Stout. She's the president, director of Special Pathogens Laboratory Research Associate Professor at the University of Pittsburgh Swanson School of Engineering. And we are talking about Legionnaire's disease. It was 40 years ago this summer in Philadelphia, an outbreak that killed 34 people, a number of them attending the American Legion Conference at the Bellevue Stratford Hotel. Steve Hornstein was a doorman at the Bellevue at the time, and David Frazier led the CDC's field investigation of the 76 outbreak. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, Legionnaire's disease then and now. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we are talking about the outbreak of Legionnaire's disease 40 years ago this summer in Philadelphia during the bicentennial, 1976, and also talking about what we know about Legionnaire's disease and some of the more modern outbreaks. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. David, let me go back to you. We were talking about this during the break about whether people like Steve, who worked at the hotel, whether any of them came down with Legionnaire's that summer of 76.
The only person who worked at the Bellevue Stratford Hotel who we think had Legionnaire's disease was an air conditioning repairman. We got blood specimens from a large number of the employees and tested them, and many of them showed immunity to Legionella, which suggested they'd been exposed sometime in the past.
Right.
There had been, in fact, a small outbreak of Legionnaire's disease recognized only retrospectively 2 years earlier.
At the same hotel?
At the same hotel.
Were you tested, Steve?
I was not. But I didn't know about the 74 outbreak till doctor here mentioned it.
Yeah, oh, so you didn't even know that
I was not aware.
There. Was it that people didn't know there was an outbreak, or was it kept hush-hush?
No, no. People hadn't recognized at the time that there was an outbreak. But folks who had been to a convention in 1974 and heard about the outbreak in 76 let people know about the fact, well, I had pneumonia when after being at a convention at the Bellevue Stratford 2 years earlier.
Well, Janet, this raises a whole host of questions, and you talk about warm water, warm, unsalty water, but I'm just thinking, I mean, this is, we all use warm, unsalty water. It's what we drink, it's what we bathe in, it's what we shower in. How should we think about that?
Well, I think what we've learned over these years is that the majority of us are exposed to Legionella bacteria in our day-to-day lives, but we don't become ill. The people that become ill after exposure have certain underlying health conditions, the number one being being a smoker, and then compromised lung defenses, chronic lung disease treated with steroid medication. Certainly the most at risk are those that are receiving immunocompromising medications like transplant patients. And so a lot of the people that get Legionnaire's disease have these conditions, but also almost 25% of the reported cases have none of those conditions. And so there is a risk to the general public as well.
Is age a factor? Are older people more susceptible, Janet?
Yes, and actually when I lecture on this, more than 77% are greater than 50 years old. And I used to think that was old, but now that I'm more than 50, not so much.
I'm with you on that one.
yes, being elderly is a risk factor.
David, one of the things that you did and others did was to interview, I guess, all these people that were either in the hospital. And we're talking about fevers as high as 107 degrees. I don't even know what that – I know what 103 feels like, right. And that's terrible. 107, I can't imagine. And what, pneumonia as well?
People had pneumonia, high fever, and then if they had a severe case, they could have problems with other organs also. And about 15% of people with the disease died.
15% died. And died rather shortly after coming down with a symptom?
To be 5 to 6 days after coming down with symptoms. It varied.
It varied. Are you still learning about Legionnaire's disease, Steve?
I am.
We're all sitting here talking.
I have an interesting antidote. There's a physician who lives in the Warwick currently. He's a Jefferson physician, and he told me he was an intern, and he treated one of the Legionnaire's patients at the University of Penn in the ICU, and that gentleman was able to survive. But the irony is he met his wife, who's a physician at there, because when they released him to the next category, that was the future bride. So I guess love brought them together.
Well, there's
and Legionnaires.
And Legionnaires as well. And it sounds like love and Legionnaires brought you together, too, right?
It did. I met my wife at the Bellevue.
And you were there for until what, 76, when the hotel was actually closed down?
I was there till the night it closed, and actually I put the chains on the door out front with the manager, Mr. Chadwick. It was on the cover of the Evening Bulletin newspaper front page.
Thinking this was, what, the end of your career, or did you have another job at the time?
I did not have another job. It was the only time in my life I collected unemployment for a brief time, and then the owners of the Bellevue Bankers Security Corporation owned it. They relocated me down to the Benjamin Franklin Hotel as assistant manager, and I went along with Mr. Chadwick, who was the managing director for the company. So I was very fortunate, and I stayed there till 1981.
Were there, and I do want to get some callers in there, David and to you, Janet, as well, were there thoughts that this was, I don't know, was there SARS at the time or some kind of a germ warfare or food poisoning? What were some of the now discredited thoughts about the culprit?
There were lots of theories. This was the bicentennial. These were American war veterans. So conspiracy theories were around. People were worried about poisoning, intentional. They were worried about toxins in the air, phosgene, nickel carbonyl, chlamydia, lots of theories that were suggested and needed to be carefully thought about and ruled out.
Do you what kind of marks you give the press for its coverage?
It varied. I'd say there was some extraordinarily good coverage very thoughtful, probing coverage. And then there were some members of the press who got a theory in their head, which they then tried to prove. And that was not as useful.
Well, I wanted to, Janet, and this obviously was a test for the public health system, for the CDC, for state health departments, I imagine local health departments as well. Were there some lessons learned from this Legionnaires' disease outbreak?
Well, certainly the CDC effort was unprecedented for its time. And I think one of the lessons from Legionnaires' disease is that Legionnaires' disease pneumonia looks like other forms of pneumonia. There's nothing characteristic about the presentation of this, you know, high fever, cough, diarrhea. These are symptoms of all different types of pneumonia. And back in 76, they were fooled. They thought it was going to be swine flu because pneumonia has these symptoms. And so I think we just need to be vigilant. And physicians today need to be making the diagnosis of Legionnaires' disease using the urine antigen and clinical culture in all these patients that have pneumonia.
And you're saying they're not, or they don't?
Right. The diagnosis of Legionnaires' disease is often missed. Doctors make their best guess, both for diagnosis and treatment. And unfortunately, many patients are not diagnosed. And so the incidence of the disease is really our best guesstimate. And most experts agree that there's far more Legionnaires' disease than is reported.
You mentioned 700,000 to a million a year, you think?
Total, from 1976 to today.
Okay,
the average
total
number each year is somewhere between 18,000 and 30,000.
Did you want to add to that, David?
Back in 1976, at that time, people who had researchers who tried to figure out the causes of pneumonia, of which there are perhaps a couple million cases a year in the United States, all told, with all the testing that we had, we could find the cause of only half of the cases of pneumonia in 1976.
Hmm.
And so there was a lot still to learn about pneumonia then. And I think many physicians were not aware of the fact that there were other agents clearly to be discovered.
But just to make sure our listeners understand, you don't contract it from another person. You have to breathe in these droplets.
This disease does not spread from person to person. And we proved that in the first 10 days of the investigation in 1976.
There were also congressional investigations. You have
I have the scars on my back from John.
They beat you up?
Representative John Murphy's hearing in which three of us spent a couple of hours being berated by Representative Murphy for failing to find the agent, for failing to collect the specimens correctly, for failing to anticipate all the possibilities.
And this was in the fall of 76?
This was in the fall of 76, yes.
And you still have the scars?
I have the scars. There was, after January of 77, there was another Senate hearing that Ted Kennedy led at CDC, which was much more fun to attend.
But at that point, things had been identified.
This was a victory lap for CDC rather than a time to be excoriated.
Let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. And we got some folks that want to join the conversation. That's David Frazier. Back in 76, he led the CDC's field investigation into the outbreak of Legionnaires' disease that began here in Philadelphia. He's currently adjunct professor of epidemiology at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Steve Hornstein is with us as well. He was the doorman at the Bellevue, or doorman there during the epidemic, the outbreak. He also worked as a desk clerk after the outbreak and currently is bell captain at the Warwick Hotel here in Philadelphia. And joining us by telephone is Janet Stout, president, director of Special Pathogens Laboratory, also research associate professor at the University of Pittsburgh Swanson School of Engineering, and is a modern-day Legionnaires' disease expert. 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Let me get Cynthia from Percocet to join us. Hi, Cynthia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. I'm a survivor.
How so?
10 years ago, I contracted the disease. I was, my mother had passed away, and we had been going through all the boxes that were up in the attic, and my there was a leak in the roof, so all the boxes were wet and moldy, and a day later, I got sick as a dog with this Legionnaires.
Did you get diagnosed with Legionnaires, or you?
I did.
You did. You went to the doc, and you
I was in the hospital for 5 days. I was 38 at the time.
And you had that high fever and the.
I had my first symptom. I had gone out with my girlfriend on a walk and felt completely fine. And 2 hours later, I had a terrible pain right under my left breast. And from there, my fever just skyrocketed.
Wow.
And within 24 hours, I was in the hospital.
Well, I'm glad you survived, and I'm sorry you had to
Me
go
too.
Through that. David, I know you don't know Cynthia, so there's no way for you to diagnose it. And I wonder whether do we have the medical technology to be able to say definitively if one goes to a doctor's office, you have Legionnaires, you have, you know, people can get this diagnosis.
Certainly can make a diagnosis with some strains of Legionella by testing the urine for the antigen of Legionella pneumophila serotype 1, or one can grow the organism from sputum of people with pneumonia. It takes a good laboratory to be able to do that. Or one can take a serum specimen early in the disease and one later in the disease and show a rise in antibodies. One of those tests could diagnose the disease.
Janet, to you, I'm looking at a headline about the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. Beyond lead, water, Flint water strongly tied to Legionnaires' disease. What's the connection?
The Flint, Michigan situation was so unusual. You know, they switched from the Lake Huron water to the Flint River, and almost immediately residents were complaining about poor water quality. And ultimately, there'd be 91 cases and 12 deaths due to Legionnaires' disease that occurred subsequent to that switch in the summers of 2014 and 2015. So, unfortunately, again, cultures for Legionella were not performed on the water in the homes and throughout Flint, Michigan, but it's biologically plausible that Legionella was increased in that water due to increased organic material, less disinfectant, and all of that. And like many cases of Legionnaires' disease, many occurred in patients that were hospitalized, and these larger buildings are more prone to have a problem with Legionella.
Is that through the pipes, or you're saying it's actually the water itself?
It's the water itself, and you mentioned aerosols as a source of exposure. And aspiration, you know, that syndrome where, you know, something goes down the wrong pipe is the way that most people talk about it. And the elderly and people that are hospitalized are more prone to aspiration. And that's another way that the water with Legionella bacteria gets down into the lung.
Let me turn to you, Stephen. I mean, you lived through this. You were the doorman at the Bellevue. Did you feel, as you listened to probably the news reports, probably more intensely than even the rest of us, did you feel like you were on the front lines of some kind of battle?
Yeah, it was very, very concerning. I heard it initially on KYW radio, and a friend told me. I remember where I was with my older brother, and he said, "Did you hear the news?" And I was like shocked. And then going into the hotel, you saw what was to be panic, and then they had these advisories not to talk to the media. It was to be directed to upper management. But worst of all, you saw the most successful hotel in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. the epicenter of all social activity, disintegrating and imploding in front of your eyes. I mean, every socialite would come there for the major balls, the harvest ball, the assembly ball. It was just so sad.
People stayed away.
Oh, God. It was like toxic to people.
Did you feel, though, that you were taken care of, that people were looking out for your health and safety?
We saw lots of Philadelphia police detectives in the building. Commissioner O'Neill, who was a patron of the hotel, Joe O'Neill, had assigned detectives to the hotel to investigate. We saw medical community. I know the CDC was there because the thing that stuck out in my mind was they even checked for pigeons on the ledge thinking they were breeding the virus and they were catching the pigeons, which always stuck out.
Yeah, always stuck. Well, you stayed at the hotel, David.
Indeed. And on the 2nd and 3rd of August, when the outbreak started, we had teams go to three different places, to Pittsburgh, to Harrisburg, and to Philadelphia, with the headquarters of the investigation in Harrisburg. But after several days, it was clear that the place that needed the most intense local investigation was Philadelphia. And so we consolidated our investigation here in Philadelphia and took the occasion then to have the Harrisburg investigators move into the Bellevue Stratford Hotel.
Wow. And interviewing people in, what, their hospital rooms?
Well, we'd been going all around the state interviewing people in the hospital rooms. One of the important things about the state investigation was the importance of public health nurses who went around to every hospital in Pennsylvania every day for the first 10 days of the investigation to identify people with pneumonia who might have been associated with the outbreak. With cutbacks in public health funding, that would be a real challenge today to be able to have that kind of coverage of the state that was possible in 1976.
And most people survived. I mean, yes.
Yes, most people did. Most
34
people, did.
People died, but and most people
and survived. And it turned out that the survival was somewhat better among people who had received an antibiotic that we've since learned is effective against Legionella.
Well, let's take another short break. We are talking about Legionnaire's disease, the outbreak 40 years ago, and what we know about Legionnaire's disease today. And again, talking with David Frazier. He led the CDC's field investigation of the 76 outbreak in Philadelphia. He's currently at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Steve Hornstein was a doorman at the Bellevue 76 to 74 to 76. He now works as the bell captain at the Warwick Hotel. And Janet Stout is with the University of Pittsburgh Swanson School of Engineering. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Before we get back to our phones, Janet, let me turn to you. And do we have the kind of, I guess, technology and regulations in place for things like heating units, air conditioning units, the other potential sources of Legionella?
Well, you know, my work in Legionnaire's disease started in 1981 with Dr. Victor Yu at the Pittsburgh VA, where we found Legionella in the water supply was causing Legionnaire's disease in the patients. And if you had asked me, it would take 40 years before the United States had an industry standard for the prevention of Legionnaire's disease, I would have been shocked. But that's actually what's happened. In 2015, the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers and Air Conditioning Industry published the first standard for the prevention of Legionnaire's disease. And that was actually followed in New York City and New York State with local laws to enforce control of Legionella, both in cooling towers and in hospitals, where about 50% of hospitals are colonized with Legionella compared to only about 10% of homes.
So there's a standard. I mean, are you saying we need tougher standards or we need laws?
Yes, I'm actually encouraged by what New York City and New York State have done, because it is regulation, it is legislation. And the ASHRAE standard is a voluntary standard, and really the only way to prevent this disease, which is transmitted by water, is testing the water for Legionella bacteria, particularly in healthcare facilities. And recently the CDC has put out a toolkit to reinforce the ASHRAE risk management for building water systems, and in that discussion they've reemphasized the appropriateness of testing healthcare facilities. Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that, David Frazier, that we need better regulations?
I think it makes good sense to know where cooling towers are, for example, which is something which generally is not systematically recorded. And I think it makes good sense to keep them clean because they if for no other reason, it makes them more efficient. But it also probably helps prevent Legionnaire's disease. The science is not as tight as I'd like, but I think that makes good sense. About water systems in hospitals where there are a lot of people who are potentially at risk of the diseases that people who are immunosuppressed can get, I think one has to have a good surveillance system for illness in that population. And I think Janet Stout's work on monitoring the environment has been real leadership in that area.
Janet, just a quick question here. For people in their homes, let's say they have an air conditioning unit, is there something they should do? Is there risk for them?
Marty, we did studies sponsored by the Environmental Protection Agency that showed that only about 10% of homes have Legionella in their water. They don't have to worry about window air conditioning as a source for exposure. It's what's in the water distribution system. And only about 20% of the cases that occurred in the community were linked to the home exposure. So most people don't have to worry about Legionella in their homes.
And I guess if you're exposed to it, chances are you'll build up an immunity. And I'm looking at you, David, but I don't want to go out on a limb here. Yes, no?
I wouldn't want to be challenging myself to develop that immunity because I might get sick before I got immune.
I got you. Let me get Carol from Wilmington to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. And
sure.
This is an unusual time. This is the first anniversary of my brother's death, and he died last year at the age of 42 in Chicago from Legionnaire's disease.
Oh, really?
And they weren't able to figure out where he got the disease from. He was a kidney dialysis patient, which I guess made him more susceptible. And he did actually survive the disease. He traveled to Florida about a couple of weeks before he got it, stayed in a hotel, came back, and then went to dialysis, had a high temperature. And that's how they found out that he had the disease.
Wow.
And it took them a long time to figure out that it was Legionnaire's number one. So I did have a question. You did answer about testing. And also, he survived the disease, but it turns out that I guess because of his kidney or whatever, that all the medicine they gave him ended up killing his liver.
Well, Carol, I'm really sorry to hear that, obviously, and this is the one-year anniversary, which obviously makes it even more painful. Let me take your questions and see what our guests have to say. The fact, David, that he was on a kidney dialysis, did that put him in at greater
risk? That would
risk,
put him in more risk. The travel also is a risk factor for Legionnaire's disease. It would be of interest to know where he was between 2 and 10 days before he developed the fever, because that's probably when he was exposed. That's the usual incubation period of Legionnaire's disease.
Janet, anything you want to say?
Well, I think one of the remarkable things about the story and our sympathy to you is how young your brother was, 42. So it's not just the elderly. It is, kidney disease and being on dialysis is a risk factor for the disease. And delays in getting the right antibiotic does contribute to mortality of this disease. So it's really important that the physicians make that diagnosis early and get on the right antibiotic, which isn't always the first choice antibiotic. And then finally, the CDC is doing more to track these travel-associated cases. So more is being done to find out the source.
And what is the right antibiotic for people that are listening? Do you want to say that, Janet, or you, David?
Sure, I can. Many people have been on an antibiotic called azithromycin, or they might think of it as a Z-Pak.
Right.
This is an antibiotic that's in a class called macrolides. It's very effective. The first one that was used back in 76 was erythromycin, so very effective. And then another class called quinolones, like levofloxacin and ciprofloxacin and others in that class, are extremely effective.
You want to add anything to that, David?
No, I think that's
that
sounds right.
That sounds right. What are your thoughts, Steve, as we're sort of reliving some of what you truly lived through?
I'm thinking of my late father-in-law was a plumbing inspector for the city of Philadelphia. And when I met him with my wife, his theory, he was probably pretty close on the money. He said the water chiller in 1978, he suspected was the source of the origin. And at the time, I didn't realize, you know, he was pretty much on his game.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let me see what Anita from Haverford has to say. Anita, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi. In 1992, both my parents, who were 59 years old, developed Legionella. It was confirmed as Legionella. My mother actually passed away. She was a heavy smoker and a lung cancer patient. But my father did not have any diagnosis, although he was a heavy smoker. Hmm. The thing I want to ask about is this. You know, it seemed at the time to us naive family members that there had to be some person-to-person connection, a contamination, because my mother died first, and then like 5 days later, my father got really sick, and then we were told he was going to die. We saw the white-out lungs on the x-ray, but he actually didn't die. A month later, in the hospital, he came home. But I wanted to ask about this. As a family, we felt very helpless to understand what happened to our parents. And we were terrified of going into their home. Is it the water? Is it her oxygen machine? Was it person to person? What advice can your guests give families as to how to understand, protect themselves, and to care for their families in light of what we now know about Legionella?
Sure. You called the right place. Let me start with you, David.
Well, the first thing to know is it does not spread from one person to another. In the investigation in 1976, one of the earliest studies we did was to go to families where a legionnaire had been at the convention but had traveled back to his home, generally his home, and we took blood specimens from family members of legionnaires who had the disease and from family members of legionnaires who did not have the disease. And we bled the family members both initially, shortly after their exposure, and 3 weeks later. And we had no idea what we were going to test this serum with until Legionella was discovered. But once Legionella was discovered, we could go back and prove that none of the family members developed disease,
and we
despite
know that to be true.
Close contact mm-hmm. with cases of Legionnaire's disease.
I wonder, too, to you, Janet, picking up on what our questioner wanted to know, which is what more, I guess, can be done today to help people understand about Legionnaire's disease and what can be done to prevent it and what to look for.
We get these kinds of questions all the time from family members. And, in fact, at the laboratory, we do testing of homes for people who have had Legionnaire's disease. And we reassure family members that it's extremely unlikely for them, you know, pregnant family members or children to get Legionnaire's disease, even if they are in that home that might have Legionella in it, for the reasons that we've talked about before. And then just to add on to Dr. Fraser's comment, you know, Dr. Yu at the Pittsburgh VA also studied those patients and looked very intensely for person-to-person transmission and also did not find that. So person-to-person transmission, in our experience, also does not occur.
Fair enough. Anita, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Did you want to add something, Steve? You don't have to.
No, that's all right. Okay. I was just taking all this in. I'm okay. Just fascinated.
No, it is. It's absolutely fascinating. Let me go back to you, Janet Stout, and Anita, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I was reading about something called the Safe Breathing Water Act. Can you fill us in on that?
Well, that's sort of a play on words by one of my colleagues. There's a Safe Drinking Water Act, which is a regulation, a government regulation to make sure that the water is treated appropriately for drinking. And so because a lot of Legionnaire's disease exposure may occur through aerosol transmission from aerosol-generating devices like decorative fountains or cooling towers or faucets and things in buildings, they sort of made a play on that word, a Safe Breathing Water Act. We need more regulations to make those water systems safe.
Let me get Ann from Devon to join our conversation. Hi, Ann. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Go ahead, Ann. Hi there.
Right after the outbreak at the Bellevue, I was working at Philadelphia College of Art, which was located in the old Arco building. right. which shares like sky space with the Bellevue. There, I think they're on the same block. The epidemiologist came to Philadelphia College of Art and asked whether we would be tested, and I volunteered to have my blood work done. And I got a letter from the mayor's office maybe 2 weeks later saying that I did test positive
wow.
for Legionnaire's disease, but then that I would have immunity. And I didn't have any recollection of ever having been sick, but apparently the epidemiologists were aware that because of the proximity of the buildings that the ARCO building could have been affected, and apparently it was.
Well, that's fascinating. Perhaps you walked down that sidewalk in front of the Bellevue. David, do you want to weigh in on Ann's story there?
Well, we certainly found people who had antibodies to Legionella that who had no history of having had a disease that that sounded like Legionnaire's disease. Mm-hmm. So and we do know that about 6% of the delegates who were at the convention and likely had some exposure to right. the organism, only 6% of them got sick. Exposure without illness certainly is not rare at all.
I wonder, too, in the couple minutes we have left, Janet, so what more do we need to do in order to understand Legionnaire's disease?
Well, I think, as we said earlier, there needs to be a greater effort on the part of physicians to make the diagnosis of Legionnaire's disease, certainly a greater effort to prevent the disease because it's in the water. It's not like the flu. We can prevent it by getting rid of or controlling Legionella in the water systems of these buildings and devices. And so I'm very encouraged by the work of ASHRAE in New York to kind of move us forward in that prevention effort. And then I'll just finally say that, just to reemphasize, is that you don't know that there's a risk unless you're looking for Legionella, both in the patients and in the water, by testing the water. And so we want to test to protect. And I think that'll go a long way to reducing those numbers of Legionnaire's disease we see every year.
And how about for you, David? You were on the ground floor 40 years ago.
Well, the biggest mystery to me that I'd love to see solved is why Legionella pneumophila, usually when it causes illness, has an incubation period of 2 to 10 days and leads to pneumonia. Whereas in some outbreaks, the same organism, as far as we can tell, causes a flu-like illness without pneumonia, and the incubation period is only 1 to 2 days.
Huh.
In that other disease, which we call Pontiac fever, one can have 95% of the exposed people get sick, and nobody dies. In Legionnaire's disease, you may have 3-6% of people get sick, and 15% mm-hmm. die.
The mystery continues then to some degree.
Indeed.
And your final thoughts, Steve, you lived through a really difficult time.
I just look back in retrospect and I feel terrible for the families and the victims, but I'm very blessed and I'm amazed that the staff survived it. It's been quite a history.
Indeed. Well, Steve Hornstein, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Dormant at the Bellevue, Stratford, when the Legionnaire's disease outbreak occurred. He now works at the Warwick Hotel. Janet Stout, thank you for joining us as well.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And she's the President, Director of Special Pathogens Laboratory, Research Associate Professor at the University of Pittsburgh Swanson School of Engineering. And David Frazier, thank you for joining us as well.
My pleasure.
And he led the CDC's field investigation of the Legionnaire's outbreak in 76 in Philadelphia, currently Adjunct Professor of Epidemiology at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. And a special thanks to Alana Gordon of The Pulse. She did a story on this. In fact, you should check it out. Terrific story that you can download, listen to on The Pulse. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.